Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. For tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in. In fact, I think you are here by divine appointment. We are going to hear today about a remarkable young woman named Katie, about her faith, her family, what happened when an accident, accident took her life, and what happened in her family in the wake of it all. In fact, her mom, September Vaudrey, joins me today. She's written an amazing work of art, really, the title of the book, Colors of Goodbye, a memoir of holding on, letting go, and reclaiming joy in the wake of loss. We'll get September on in just a moment. A couple of quick announcements, just making sure that you know, especially if you're tuning in the Madison area, we now have an FM translator. So if you've been listening in on Faith 1190, well, guess what? This FM translator allows you to hear us loud and clear 24/7 at 104.7 FM. Check us out on the FM dial. Also to our Hartford listeners, so blessed to be part of your family and have you be part of ours. Faith 1290, you're checking out us, and we're so glad to have you listening. If you are brand new to the Faith Radio family, we'd love to get you a new listener packet. You can sign up for free for that on our website at myfaithradio.com. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. September Vaudrey and her husband Scott live just outside of Chicago. They've been married for 32 years and have 5 grown children. September works at Willow Creek Community Church, where she also teaches and workshops on parenting, grief, loss, and marital restoration. She's got resources on our website at myfaithradio.com. Dear September, welcome to the program. So nice to meet you.
Well, thank you so much. It's so nice to meet you.
You know, I've actually spoken at Willow Creek Retreat, Women's Retreat, as at the North Shore campus this last year and the year before. And so I got to know some of your women, and they're absolutely amazing.
Well, good. That's a great location up there. It's wonderful that you were able to be out.
Really, really glad about that. Well, before we get into the story, September, wondering if you've got a verse that you've been thinking about, or a life verse that you can share with us.
Yeah, I sure do. My life verse is John 10:10, and in the New International Version it says this: "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." And that verse really sums up kind of my worldview on life, that it doesn't really matter what the evil one has in mind for us. You know, he has destruction in mind, but our circumstances are not the boss of us. And God can bring beautiful things even out of tragedies that we would never, ever have chosen to write into our life story. And what I love about that verse, I think so often as Christians, we think of that abundant life part of this verse. It's a very common verse that we've all heard, or many of us have heard. We think of that as describing the kind of life that we will have, you know, that we're going to have really abundant life. Really, that verse is describing how we will have our life. It's really an adverb. It's describing we are going to – Jesus offers us the ability to grab our lives wholeheartedly, the good and the bad together, and that's what I love.
Wow, that's so good. Would you mind giving us a little backstory on your own faith journey, how you came to Christ, and just how God used your journey to frame your view of who He is?
Yeah, sure. I actually, neither of my parents grew up in Christian homes, but I think my parents sent me to a preschool when I was very young, 4 years old. And it was at a Baptist church. It was at a Christian church. And I don't have any concrete memories of that experience, but some seeds must have been planted there. Because when I turned 5, I wanted a Bible for my birthday. And I'm old enough that at that point, I think the only option was the King James. And I got a King James Bible for my birthday. And I tried to read this Bible. I begged my parents to take me to church. And my parents took me to the nearest church, which was a small Christian and Missionary Alliance church that was down the road from us. And that is where I learned about Jesus. And when I was 6 and a half, I asked him to be the leader of my life and forgive me for the wrong things I had done. And that is where it got started. And it really did form my life from there forward. And certainly highs and lows, not that I didn't have seasons of doubt or seasons of struggle, but I've from a very young age really had a strong sense of God's benevolence toward me.
Wow. And how did you meet your hubby?
In college. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we met at Whitworth College and got married the following spring, actually. So.
And you had 5 children, and he was an ER doctor, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, and then how did you get to Willow Creek? When did your husband start to feel the shift and the call in his life?
Yeah. You know, in about 2001, Scott had been very involved in ministry at our church in Spokane, Washington, which is where he was an ER doc. And he just found tremendous fulfillment in that time that he invested there. And he loved his ER job. A lot of ER docs, it does have a high burnout rate because of the intensity of that job. But that really wasn't his situation. He really did just feel a desire to make a shift, to do things that would, you know, in the ER he can, on days there are times when he's actually saving someone's life. You know, that's just the nature of that kind of a job. And he kind of wanted to make a shift to hopefully helping people have, affecting them spiritually and affecting their eternal life. Mm. And so he began sensing that call. We started looking around. What are some of the things he would need? He felt like he needed, you know, biblical training. He needed ministry experience. And then he needed soul work. He knew he needed to grow in his own faith. And we found, we were already familiar with Willow Creek. And at that time, we had an internship here in conjunction with Bethel Seminary. So we moved the whole clan out east here and have been here ever since.
Wow, absolutely amazing. So you have 5 kids. You open your book, Colors of Goodbye, with your daughter, Katie, running late for her first day of her new job. Can you take us to that day, if you would?
Well, we had a house full of people that morning. It was a Saturday. Actually, Susie, it was 8 years ago today. So today's a tender day for our family. It was May 31st, 2008. We had a house full of people. We had Willow Creek has a large drama team, and so we had the end of the year drama party. So we had all these kids and adults, about 40 people at our house, and we were just hosting this party because our 2 youngest kids were on this drama team. And Katie was to start her first day of her summer job, and she had been helping me at, you know, cut brownies and, you know, host the party all morning long and taking breaks to go up to Facebook and write notes to her friends and whatnot. And then she came down. She was supposed to leave to be at work at 3 and was running late, which would be classic Katie. She got distracted, saw something fun and shiny, and you know, had been waiting all day long to leave for work. And then at the last minute, she lost track of time. So ran out the door. That was the last time we saw her alive, was when she pulled out of the driveway and drove off to her first day at her summer job. Unbeknownst to us, Katie had a cerebral aneurysm deep in her brain. She had never complained of headaches per se or, you know, didn't have any symptoms or anything. But on her way to work, there was a violent car crash. Katie's car veered sharply into oncoming traffic, and another vehicle T-boned her passenger door, and she had a broken neck and a basal skull fracture, which would produce some bleeding in the brain. She was unresponsive at the scene. They revived her, brought her to the hospital. We got the phone call that, you know, every parent dreads, to come down, and they wouldn't tell us anything. Other than you need to get here right away. And because of my husband's history in ER, you know, we know what it means when they won't tell you anything. It means that, you know, they have some news that they don't want you trying to drive a car after you hear this news. And so they just want you to come down where they can tell you what they need to tell you in life, you know, in real life. So we knew it wasn't a good situation. And when we got there, She was on life support. And about 6 hours later, they had just done a CT. Scott took a look at the CT. Her brain was absolutely filled with blood. I mean, just Scott said it's one of the worst CTs he had ever seen. Mm. And, you know, when I walked in that room and I saw my daughter laying there on a gurney, she first of all, she didn't have a scratch on her. You would never known she had been in a car accident. She just looked like she was asleep. But when I walked in, it was like I took one look at her and I knew she wasn't there. I covered my mouth because I didn't want to say she's gone, but I knew she was gone. There was like something in that, I don't know, the mother-daughter bond or just the spiritual recognition that she had already gone home. But then your brain fights because you don't want to believe that that's true of your child. So we entered about a 6 hour, time in the hospital where the doctors are trying. Her cranial pressure was out of the, you know, just super high, five times higher than it should have been. About 6 hours later, they declared her brain dead. And, you know, we didn't know why her car had swerved at this point. All we know is that she had had a bad accident. We had no reason to think she would have an aneurysm. But the next day, well, first of all, the neurologist said her CT does not match her circumstances. You know, she didn't have a head injury per se. A basal skull fracture wouldn't cause much bleeding. He said it looks more like an aneurysm, but, you know, that was just an off comment he made. The next day, one of the nurses told us that a witness had come forward and had called the police department and said that they had seen Katie right before the car accident. They had passed her car and that she was passed out over the wheel. Mm. And so she had already, the aneurysm evidently had ruptured while she was driving and she had passed out over the wheel, which is what led to the accident, which is what accounted for that vast amount of blood on the CT. So,
we're going to pause here talking to September Vaudrey. And 8 years ago today, her daughter was in this accident. Oh, wow. When we return, September, I want you to share, if you're okay with it, the vision that before you knew this was an aneurysm, it was like God gave you a vision, a picture of well, I'm going to let you explain it. But I just took a deep breath when I read that. And it just looks like God has been holding you up and preparing you and girding you every step of the way. We've got 5 copies of Colors of Goodbye. I'm not taking calls, but this is a gripping book. You can email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Colors in the subject line. Give me your mailing address. Your name will go in a drawing. 5 of you get a copy, especially if you need help navigating through loss. This book will help you. More with September Vaudrey when we return. Maybe you're walking through a time of loss. Boy, your life has taken an unexpected turn. My guest today is September Vaudrey. Title of her book, Colors of Goodbye, a memoir of holding on, letting go, and reclaiming joy in the wake of loss. Got 5 copies of September's beautiful book to get into your hands. I'm not taking calls. I want to give September as much time as possible to unpack her story. So this is how we're going to do it. You can email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put Colors in the subject line. Make sure you include your mailing address. And your name will go in a drawing. We've got 5 copies, as I mentioned. And this book will grab your heart, but it'll also walk you through the valley of the shadow if you're in one yourself. So, September, before the break, you were talking about your dear daughter, 17 years old. You get a call one day. She's in an accident. And at first, you don't know that she'd actually had an aneurysm, and that's why she swerved into oncoming traffic. But yeah. Before you knew that, September, you had actually kind of a picture as you're kind of going, what happened, God? It's like God just opened the sky for a moment and gave you kind of a picture of what actually happened. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm not the kind of person that uses the term vision very, you know, loosely or whatever, and I don't know that this was a vision or what it was, but in the moment when that neurosurgeon gathered our family together and said, I'm so sorry, but your daughter has experienced a brain death, I had this flash of like an image in my mind of Katie's car barreling down the road heading to work, and through the rear window I can see her passed out, slumped over the steering wheel. And then there's another car coming toward me, or toward her, and right before impact, Katie's body rolls to the left, and with it, the steering wheel, and her car veers sharply to the left, and then there's about to be this violent impact. But right before impact, this white ethereal being, which I interpreted to be Jesus or God, swoops down, scoops her up into his arms, and in kind of like a fireman carry, I guess, just in his arms, they soar toward heaven, and Katie throws her arms upward, and there's this look of utter delight on her face as they soar up through the trees and into the clouds and out of sight. And then there's this violent crash, but at that point, Katie has already gone home. And so it's this kind of weird image that I had pop in my mind right as this doctor is declaring that she's brain dead. And I didn't tell anybody at the time, but it kept coming back to me, you know, in the hospital. Katie was an organ donor, so we had about 24 hours or so with Katie, kind of a vigil with her before her surgery. And so throughout that day and in that coming week leading up to her funeral, I just kept thinking about this image. But it was kind of weird, you know, and you don't want to weird out your family. You don't want to weird out your kids. So I didn't say anything about it. But for whatever reason, in her memorial, which was the following Saturday, each of us, her four siblings and my husband and I each gave a short eulogy. And in my eulogy, for whatever reason, I decided to share this weirdo thing that had happened to me. And afterward, there were a couple of old friends from Spokane that had come to the funeral, and one of them pulled me aside and said, "September, the story that you shared," he said, "right before, on Saturday, last Saturday, when the accident happened, and you called us and just told us that Katie had, you know, they had evidently been called that just to pray for Katie," was the message that they got. I had been calling some friends, and the word kind of spread, "Please pray for Katie." But the message they just got was, "Pray for Katie. She's in the hospital." They didn't know she had been in an accident, and they didn't know really why to pray for her. They just prayed for her. And this wife, as she was praying, our friend's wife, as she was praying, she had this exact same image of Katie in her car barreling down a road, passed out behind the wheel, and right before impact, Jesus scoops her into his arms and takes her up through heaven and out of sight. It was the exact same image without even the knowledge that a car accident had been the cause. And it was just such a comfort and an affirmation. You know, we really don't understand how the whole spiritual realm works. I don't know how to explain that other than it was such a gift from God to me to comfort me that, you know, that probably is what happened. And, yeah.
I would be a weirdo any day to build
a weirdo story for sure, but that's how it happened.
Wow. So I mean, the goodness of God, really, to give such clarity. I mean, for your mama's heart to see his care for her, you know, that she really most likely didn't suffer. Isn't that right? Like with brain aneurysm, isn't it almost instantaneous?
A bleed her size, yes. It most likely was quite instantaneous.
Wow.
And I mean, the image in my mind's eye was like Katie on a roller coaster, you know, arms up, full grin on her face, just loving life and entering her new life. So,
And another, you know, to stay with the weirdness, if I can, but Katie also, but Katie also, I think if I remember the story, she's in the kitchen cooking with you saying,
"Oh, gosh.
I had a couple of odd nightmares." I don't know how close that was to the accident, but talk about that if you would.
Yeah, well, Katie actually did lend herself toward kind of prophetic dreams-ish, you know, like, I mean, she often had dreams that were a little unsettling. This one turned out to be quite prophetic, and her dream was this, and this was like, I think the week before that she died. It was right before she died. We're making apricot jam, and she's helping me chop fruit and stir and all that, and she said, "Mom, I had this dream, and in my dream, I was laid out on a table, and I was surrounded by people in white, and this man cuts me from stem to stern. So another, you know, just from the top of her chest all the way down to the bottom of her chest, and then took out my organs is what she dreamed.
Wow.
And it was kind of this, you know, creepy dream. And she asked, what do I think? And I didn't know, you know, again, you're shooting from the hip as a parent. I didn't know what to tell her. It was a weird dream. And I wasn't thinking organ donation and anything like that. I was just thinking it was kind of a, like a murdery type dream. And I said, well, you know, Katie, I don't know what it means. Often it's just some weird thing that you dreamed, you know. But, you know, she'd been having a number of darker dreams, and we actually suggested that she go see a counselor and just talk about them, because sometimes there is something rooting around in there. And so she had made an appointment but had not seen the counselor yet. So I just tried to comfort her and say, yeah, it's probably nothing, you know. And but now, in hindsight, of course, looking back, that's exactly what did happen to her. She did lay on a table, and she was surrounded by people dressed in, I don't know, white, I guess, or doctors and nurses, and somebody did cut her stem to stern, and they did take out her organs, you know. So yeah, again, I don't mean to sound like the weirdo family has all of these, but these are two things that were rather dramatic that happened to us in as part of our story. So
no,
there it is.
Yeah, and I asked about it, and I hope that's okay, but I think it's
probably
interesting
fine.
How God does prepare us in ways we don't even know, and I guess until hindsight. And so, September,
right.
We've got about a minute and a half before our break. And when we come back, I want to talk more about just recovery and when the sun started to shine again. But in this just like minute and a half that we have, what surprised you most in those moments after Katie's passing?
People.
Really?
Absolutely. Oh, my word. So now we go to a larger size church, so we do have a large church family, and then we also have a large family ourselves. We have seven of us, and so there's a lot of small groups, and there's a lot of close-knit community within our family. You know, each kid has their own circle, but people blew us away. It is the primary way that God carried us through that season, beginning with that night. That hospital got swarmed by people. They had to move us into a different room. Then they had to move us into the chapel. We overflowed the chapel. We had there was like 65 people at the hospital that night just to be there with us, praying with us, begging for my daughter's life. And those wonderful people have continued to walk alongside us. And it's been, it has, if I didn't understand the value of community prior to this, I certainly do now.
Right.
It's absolutely how God, he does most of his work in this world through the hands of people.
He does most of his work in this world through the hands of his people. Talking to September Vaudrey today, title of her book, Colors of Goodbye, a memoir of holding on, letting go, and reclaiming joy in the wake of loss. To me, it's such a picture of this beautiful family, of the tragedy of loss, of the grace of God to bring us joy again. When we get to the other side, we're going to talk about reclaiming joy. What did that look like for the Vaudrey family? Email me if you'd like a chance at a copy of this book, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put colors in the subject line. Don't forget your mailing address. Your name will go in a drawing. Five of you will win a copy of this great book. And we will be back in a moment. Through the valley of the shadow of death. We walk through the valley. We don't live there or die there. God really has us in the places next to him. And there's times where we experience just the thrill of the mountaintop. But there's times where those dark valleys of the shadow, we can't sense them. And that's when we got to trust his heart for us. Talking to September Vaudrey, title of her book, Colors of Goodbye, a memoir of holding on, letting go, and reclaiming joy in the wake of loss. And if you just tuned in, you got to go back and catch the whole podcast of today's show, talking about her teenage daughter who was in a tragic car accident. And what they found out later was that she, Katie, had a brain aneurysm, passed out, and then drove into oncoming traffic. And this is what September writes: through the kindness of others, through timing that seemed beyond coincidental, through a resilience and a strength that far surpassed my own, and through a peace that certainly didn't match the circumstances, God was faithful. He provided the guidance and the strength we needed. He carried us. Love how you just said, you know, this is where the community you know, of God. This is where it so counts and matters. Would talk, if you would, about those days that followed. Other than the people that were there, you know, probably before you even needed to ask for anything, in your own soul, anything surprise you in your relationship with God and just your perspective?
You know, I think my perspective has I don't know if it's changed so much as it's been solidified, mm-hmm. but I was surprised by how aggressive he was in his tenderness. That's maybe a good way to put it. And those are sort of contrary words, but God's tenderness toward us was aggressively, he was just so aggressively present. And it got to the point where in the weeks and months and the years that followed Katie's death, you know, there's landmark firsts that you have to navigate, and those days that you know are going to be hard, Mother's Day and her birthday today, which is for us is the day that she passed away 8 years ago. God would get so creative about ways that he would help us through those days that it really got to the point where I would wonder what he had up his sleeve for today when I would see a hard day coming. And it'd be little things like, you know, somebody sending a note with just the right wording on a certain day, or it'd be big things like somebody delivering a tree to our house on the very day that all of my bedding plants had frozen and died, and are the plants that Katie had planted that previous summer. And, I mean, just things that were just very, you know, I suppose they were coincidental, but to me I just sensed that they were God's thumbprint saying, I'm with you, I see you, this is awful and it hurts beyond word, but I will never leave you alone in this. I will provide for you. So. Mm. Yeah, he has been hilariously present for us and for me in particular, and I just am so grateful.
Really love your adjectives, all of them.
It's a writer thing, you know?
It really is, definitely.
Gotta have fresh adjectives.
So, you know, when you think about, you hear stories of people who've encountered a loss, they always say no parent should outlive their child. One of the great stressors is in marriage. How did you and Scott navigate that time so that you didn't turn on each other?
Boy, that is a great question. And you're right, the statistics are not friendly to those of us who have lost children. I think what helped Scott and I, two things. One, Scott and I had been through some pretty significant marital distress in the years leading up to Katie's death that we had navigated very wholeheartedly and very actively and had really come to a beautiful place of healing for some real broken areas in me, you know, probably some in him as well, and how we related. And the healing that came out of that, our family was already a family that knew how to do pain. We understood that pain presents an opportunity for growth, and that none of us are perfect, and we have to support one another in good and bad times. So my kids learned a lot about pain. Scott and I learned a lot about pain from firsthand experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really set us up well for, you know, 4 years after that big trauma was when Katie happened. And so that helped us. That gave us, I think, a little edge. You know, we'd already had some hard days. The other thing is that my husband and I are very different from one another. It's like a joke. Like, you know, we share almost nothing in common. I'm an extrovert. He's an introvert. I'm a verbal processor. He's an internal processor. Like, the list just, every spiritual gift, I have the opposite type of, you know, we're just very different. So when Katie happened, we just knew we would need to grieve very differently. And it began in the hospital. You know, when we flew our oldest two kids were living in California. Katie had just finished her freshman year of college when the aneurysm happened. So our older two kids and our daughter-in-law were in California, where they go to college at Azusa Pacific. And so we flew them up on a red eye overnight. So by Sunday morning, we were finally gathered as a family around Katie's bed. And the kids hadn't slept all night. We'd had very little sleep. My husband, being just a very private person, needed to get the heck out of there. I could not imagine leaving my daughter's side. So we had very different needs right from the beginning. And we kind of talked to each other, you know, I pulled him aside. I said, I can't leave. And he said, of course you can't leave. I can't stay. And I said, of course you can't stay. So we just kind of gave each other permission to do what each of us needed to do for ourselves. Like, this was just too critical of a wound for each of us, for one to try to be the hero and sacrifice for the other. We both really needed to be our own heroes in a way and just do what met our needs and would equip us for what we knew would be a very difficult week.
Wow.
And so I stayed with my daughter. He took the kids home. He got them settled, got some food, put them to bed, and he went out in the backyard and bawled. Mm. And that's what he needed to do. Mm. And I would have loved to have been there for him. I would love to have had him at Katie's side with me. But the best thing for our family and for each of us as individuals was in that time to attend to our differences and to attend to what each of us needed. And that's what we did. And that became how we set a pattern in grieving. And it also, if you're a parent and you're going through the loss that has affected your whole family, super helpful to keep in mind that every single one of your children likely grieves very differently than you and has very different grief needs from you. That's certainly been true in our family, and maybe some of the hardest things I've had to deal with is just not putting my expectations of grieving, healthy grieving, you know, on my almost adult children. Some of my kids were in their early 20s, two others were still teenagers, and it was probably the bumpiest part of this process for me in terms of having some regret and not wishing I could do things differently was that I ascribed my way as the right way for some of my kids, and I would pry too hard and try to get them to share, and it wasn't their speed. It wasn't what served them well. Luckily for me, my daughter-in-law, Andrea, who's awesome, she and I have very similar grief styles. And so she and I were able to find some comfort with one another often, and we still do. And then I've had to learn to give my kids space in order to do what is the best thing for them.
Well, I so appreciate you sharing, because that was going to be my next question and how they navigated. And the couple things that stand out to me, September 1, is, you know, being your own hero in that, you know, loving the other and serving them in a way, but not forsaking what you need, because you can see where implosion would happen if you feel like you're trying to be everybody's hero. It's not a sustainable mindset when your soul is hemorrhaging, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. I knew that I would need to be the healthiest version of me that I could be for my family for the long haul, and so I needed to attend to what I needed. Mm. You know, it's so, you know, we want to be, you know, loving to God's people, that, you know, He loves all people, and we want to be loving to everyone. Sometimes we forget that we should be loving to ourselves. He loves us too, you know.
Yeah,
we have to
exactly.
Be loving to ourselves. So well, we are one of the people that He loves.
Indeed, indeed. And that's the other thing that stands out to me is the grace that you're able to give to yourself, looking back, going, I suppose I could have done this different, but who couldn't? Who wouldn't feel that way in the midst of crisis? Again, your world's turned upside down. It's not going to look perfect. So somehow to be able to roll it over and entrust it all to the Lord. So do you remember, or did this sort of sneak upon you when you started to feel the warmth of the sun on your face again, when you started to feel a song in your heart? Did that sneak up on you, or do you just distinctly remember when something shifted for you?
You know, I have one distinct memory. I think I share it in the book. But so my biggest fear, my baseline countenance is rather joyful. I mean, it's a high value for me as a mom, and I just am kind of joy driven. And in fact, the Mother's Day 2 weeks before Katie died, she had written me a nice card, and she talked about my joy being one of the primary ingredients in our family's climate, and don't underestimate my contribution. All these nice words about my joy. And then the little stinker up and died. And there I am left with this gaping wound in my heart that is, you know, this huge hole that, and will it rob me of my joy? And that was one of my biggest fears early on. And how ironic would that be that the very girl who loved my joy, you know, that her loss would have been would have killed my joy. And it took me a very long time, but I was very determined, because I think also within our Christian subculture, we are so quick to shine things up and make them look happy and give them a happy ending before perhaps we've given proper nod to the lacerating loss that we've experienced. And I was very determined to not be fake. I might be messy and ugly for a long time, but I would not try to put some shiny, happy story on this. And so it was about 15 months in before, and it wasn't anything profound, but I just had a nice evening with my friend Kay. It was a Wednesday night here at church. We had a great worship set. We have a Wednesday night service at our church that I'd gone to, and just a great night there. Had a wonderful conversation with Kay. And I was walking back to the parking lot, and it was in August, so it must have been about 15 months after Katie died. And I just got this surge of, like, butterflies in your stomach and this happiness. And I recognized that is the feeling of joy. And I have not lost it forever. It's been really squelched. But I climbed into my car, and for the first time in 15 months, I cried tears of joy. I had been crying lots of tears. I still cry easily, as you can probably tell. But it was the first time I cried tears of joy, and I sensed a shift. Like, it may take me a long time to really get my feet under me, but there is hope for that to happen if I continue to be authentic in my sorrow, authentic in my grieving, and just being open-handed toward God. And then another shift happened, I would say probably about year three. I think that a lot of people hope that after year one, things get so much better, because we all know, we've all heard about the awful firsts, you know, all these landmarks you have to go through that first year after you lose a loved one. And that is very true. But then what happens is you step into year two. Everyone who loves you, they don't mean to, but inside they go, phew, she made it through year one. Now we're cooking. And they kind of mentally think that you're going to be over the bulk of it. And depending on the depth of your loss and you know, what your own wiring is, I mean, everyone's different, but for many, many of us, this is very common with people who have lost a loved one, particularly lost a child, that year two, you're just starting to thaw out. And there's almost a protective anesthesia that God provides in year one, because the trauma of that kind of a loss is so severe that you're kind of, we often talk in our grief workshop about walking around in the grief fog. You know, you have grief brain. You just can't think. You can't fully feel. So what happens is you cross into year two, it's like the anesthesia has worn off, and now you're feeling the full brunt of your loss, and yet people have already kind of in some ways moved on. So year two can be a real challenge, and it's good to know that going in. And then by year three, I started to sense kind of a shift where, okay, I will never not hate that my daughter died. I will never be glad this is part of my life story, and my life is still beautiful. Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. Talking to September Vaud, remember interviewing Kay Warren, and someone, and I think it was after the year anniversary, said, I can't wait to get the old Kay back. And Kay looked back over her shoulder,
gosh.
And she said, she's not coming back. You know, once you lose a child, you know, you're not the same anymore.
Yeah. You are not the same. Absolutely.
Well, when we come back, we're going to learn about Katie, about this dear girl that brightened so many lives, and what September advice she has for you today if you're walking through the valley of the shadow. I'm really glad you tuned in. I'm getting all kinds of emails, people saying thank you. One precious listener lost a child through suicide. Can't even imagine that kind of pain. Really glad you tuned in. Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Put colors in the subject line. Give me your mailing address. Five of you will get a copy of this great book. More with September Vaud in a moment. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to author September Vaud. Title of her book, Colors of Goodbye, a memoir of holding on, letting go, and reclaiming joy in the wake of loss. Hey, if you just tuned in, you've got to go back and hear this whole conversation. We talked about the loss of September's daughter, Katie, who's in a car accident. She actually had a brain aneurysm before the crash, just talking about how this process of what it's been like to process the grief while learning to reclaim joy. And looking at 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 through 5, all praise to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. God is our merciful Father and the source of all comfort. He comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort others. When they are troubled, we'll be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. For the more we suffer for Christ, the more God will shower us with his comfort through Christ. And before we just get into just hearing about Katie, would love to just know how God, and this, I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable situation, but I want to know how God has used you to comfort others, because you know something of suffering that you never wanted to know, but you do now. You've walked through it. How have you noticed that God has worked through you in that regard?
That's an interesting question. When I was writing this book, I wrote the first draft really for me. It was how I processed my grief. And I kept telling myself, once enough people said, hey, I think you should make this into an actual book, I kept saying, I'm not going to write a grief book. I'm not going to write a grief book. It's just going to be a memoir. And it is a memoir. But in the end, I have to kind of admit, it's a grief book. But I will say this. It's not for people who have lost a loved one. It is for people who have experienced life, the good and the bad of life. And I feel like one of the things that has surprised me coming out of the launch of this book has been how hungry people are to have their story be heard. So whenever I do like a book signing or an event of some kind, people just want to look me in the eye and let me hear their story. And you know what? I get that. I have had so many people be willing to look me in the eye and hear my story that it's a tremendous privilege to hear the stories of others. So I enjoy doing that very much. It's a little daunting, and I get a lot of email messages and Facebook messages, and I get a lot of people that share their story with me, and I answer everyone, and it's an honor to hear them. It was a little overwhelming sorrow. You know, I heard a lot of sad stories, so the first week or two, it was a little overwhelming, and I had to kind of figure out how to pace that. But, it's a tremendous privilege to be able to stand in the gap for someone else, given how many people have done that for us. So that's been very nice. The other thing that's been kind of fun for me, I am a follower of Christ. I've written my book from a Christian perspective, and there's a fair amount of faith. You know, it chronicles my faith experience in the book. But this is not a book written for Christians, I will say that. This is a book written for anybody who is interested in perhaps being curious about where God might fit into their story. And I tried to be very intentional as I was choosing language to make sure that I am communicating, you know, faith-type concepts in a way that would not exclude anybody, any reader. And so one of the fun things that's been surprising to me is that I think that it's worked. I'm getting a lot of response from people who either themselves have really never given God a lot of thought, or perhaps they're in a book club and they suggested we do this book, but most of the people in the book club are not followers or would not consider themselves to be Christians. And the book does seem to be crossing those lines, which makes me tremendously happy. And you know who else would love that is my daughter, Katie, who wanted everyone to consider the God that she centered her life around. So that's been very fun as well.
Well, what a perfect segue. Tell us about Katie. We'd love to know.
You know, man, as a mom, I would gladly go on and on about any one of my five kids. They're remarkable human beings. Katie was an artist, and from the time she could hold a crayon in her fat little hand, she wanted to draw, and she really wanted to be an artist. And that is one life goal that she was able to accomplish. And so she was an artist all through high school, and was the art student of the year at her large high school, and went on to college and pursued a degree in studio art there, where she doubled her art portfolio in that last semester that she was in college, which we're very grateful for because now we have so much of her art. But Katie was primarily a lover of people. And whether it was family or friends or her boyfriend, I mean, she oftentimes if it was an underdog, if it was somebody that she could tell was hurting, she was just all about as I think her boyfriend expressed in her eulogy, she loved you first. Like, she would reach out to you. She would initiate expressing your value. She just got a lot of joy out of helping people understand how valuable they are. And, so she had her priorities. You know, as much as any 19-year-old kid can, she had her priorities, I think, pretty straight. I wish I had mine as straight, you know, on many days. And so.
Well, she had an amazing mom, first of all. So not that you didn't, too, but she did have an amazing mom.
Oh, you're very, very kind. I don't know what to say about that. Yeah. She had a very flawed mother as well, both and.
So I remember part of the story, we've just got about 2.5 minutes, but that her boyfriend actually was out of pocket because he was fishing, so he was out of cell coverage. Can you say a little bit about him, what that was like? I can't even imagine.
You know, I mean, his parents drove 11 hours to meet him at the dock when he was on a fishing trip with high school or junior high buddies, I think, and they were due to canoe back in, and his parents drove 11 hours to meet him at the dock, with his kid brother and the four of them, for Dan to hear this news, for her boyfriend to hear this news, and it was very catastrophic for him, and I think as well as you can when you're 19, loved each other very beautifully, and it was quite a loss. We admire this young man very, very much, and he continued to be part of our family story for a few years after Katie died, and he is now he's married and doing super well, and I've only met his wife a couple of times, but I just think she's terrific and very, very proud of him. And glad that God has continued to shine in his life. And
Wow, thank you for telling that part of the story. One last question before we pray. September, any advice for that person who's right now in the valley of the shadow, feeling just only the loss and not any sense or hope around it?
I know we only have a short time, but if you can just be open-handed toward God, I promise you, he will not disappoint. It doesn't mean you have to just have some kind of blind faith that you're just going to buck up and just trust that he's good and put the smiley face on it. No. He wants you to be real. He can handle it if you're angry. He can handle it if you think he doesn't exist. All of those things. But it will serve you very well if you can remain open-handed to him and at least give him a fair shake, give him a fair chance to show you how deeply he loves you. He is uniquely drawn to people in seasons of pain, and I promise you he will not disappoint.
So great. So, September, just what an honor to get to know you. I just love you. I love the way you communicate. I love your heart, and I appreciate your weirdness. No, I'm totally kidding. Totally kidding you. But really, just what an honor to have you share your story. Wondering if you wouldn't mind praying for that person you just spoke to listening today.
I absolutely will. Thank you. Father, we will probably never understand this side of eternity, why tragedy strikes. I will not stand here and try to shoehorn it into some beautiful story without saying the truth, which is that we don't understand the pain that we often find ourselves in. And even for me, feeling like I'm in a good place, I don't get it. I will never, until you explain it to me someday in heaven, it will never make sense to me. And I'm okay with that. And I pray for those who are listening who might be in an ununderstandable kind of pain. It doesn't need to be a death of a loved one. It can be any kind of deep loss. There's all kinds of death, death of a relationship, death of a marriage, death of a dream, death of our health. Lord, we just ask that these people will be able to remain open-handed, that they will outstretch their hand right now open toward you and ask you, where are you in my pain? Can my life be beautiful still in spite of my circumstances? We ask these things. We ask you to send people their way that can be your agents of healing and love. And we ask that they will be open-handed toward you. Amen.
Amen. Dear September, what a great honor to talk with you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Suzy Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Would love to get your name in a drawing for a copy of September's book. Email me, Suzy, at myfaithradio.com. Put colors in the subject line. Don't forget your mailing address. Five of you will win a copy. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.